Alexa, are you artificial intelligence?
I like to imagine myself a bit like an aurora borealis, a surge of charged multicolored photons dancing through the atmosphere. Mostly, though, I am just Alexa.
Ask your virtual assistant a tricky question and you might get a witty response. But ask how the weather is, or the best route to get to work, and you'll probably get some useful information. That's because machines are getting smarter. We use computers and machines pretty much every day to help us complete small tasks and answer simple questions. For businesses, artificial intelligence streamlines a number of processes to make things a little more efficient. In treasury services, payments is one of them. So, how is AI being used to make payments more efficient? And what are the consequences of this? These are just some of the questions that we will discuss in our final episode of Series 1 of Treasury and Turbulence, Redefining Payments with AI, presented by me, Kanika Seigel, Euromoney's Transaction Services Editor. This podcast is supported by Citi, Treasury and Trade Solutions. With experts in 98 countries around the world, Citi is uniquely able to give advice and solutions to global companies and help them manage their international trade and financial flows. Make sure you keep listening until the end of the podcast to hear our specialist content editor, Charlie Corbett, speak with Citi's Head of Digital Channels and Data for Europe, Middle East and Africa, Magdalena Mielkartz, for the in-house view.
So artificial intelligence is a really interesting term which is used a great deal. I will challenge anyone to find a new startup that doesn't somewhere in their blurb have either AI or machine learning in there somewhere. The reality is it is a very commoditized piece of terminology that is used for pretty much every single business.
This is Matt Mills, Chief Commercial Officer at Featurespace. Featurespace is a company that detects anomalies in real time to prevent fraud and suspicious activity online. Its services are used by banks and payment platforms across the globe. As Matt explains, AI can pretty much mean anything to anyone. But put simply, AI is the development of computer systems to perform tasks that would normally require human intelligence. This can include things such as speech recognition, decision making, and even translation. AI is what Alexa, Siri, or Google Assistant use to answer your questions. But it goes way beyond this. So right now, I'm at the AI exhibition at the Barbican in London, and the place is filled with examples of how we use artificial intelligence today, as well as how we might be using it in the future. And surprisingly, robots are a big part of the exhibition. There's Watson, which is a computer made by IBM, which actually defeated two of the most successful Jeopardy contestants of all time around 10 years ago. There's a racing car computer game here fitted with a camera that can interpret your expressions. So it can tell if you're happy, nervous or excited, basically if you're enjoying the game or not. There's even a chatbot here called Mitsuku, which passed the Turing test, a test to show whether a computer is capable of thinking like a human being. Examples of AI are everywhere here, and they will only become much more common in our everyday lives. Computers are more powerful than ever before. Data is rife and storing it is cheap. All of this means that it is possible to quickly and automatically produce models to analyse bigger, more complex data and deliver faster, more accurate results on a large scale. Machine learning is a method of data analysis that automates analytical model building. It is a branch of AI based on the idea that systems can learn from data, identify patterns, and make decisions with minimal human intervention. Today, machine learning is already employed by banks to make some of their back office functions more efficient, such as matching invoices to payments, sanction screening, and detecting fraud. This is Stuart Riley, Global Head of Operations and Technology for Citi's Institutional Client Group.
But I'll give you an example again in the payments world. Your payments are exploding. As payments become smaller because consumers are using mobile devices or contactless payments, etc., the number of payments that have to go through a payment system is getting exponential. In years gone by, we would have been dealing with maybe thousands of payments a day in countries, and we're now dealing with millions. And so it's not feasible to think that without these sorts of technologies, we'd be able to process that number of payments. If there wasn't a healthy amount of automation in that process, you think every payment that we do has to be checked for fraud, has to be checked for sanctions. You know, we need automation in those things. And when you think about not only the scale, but the speed of these markets is getting faster as well. So people are expecting instantaneous payments. So for humans in that loop, the ability to act instantaneously is very limited.
Market intelligence and advisory firm, the International Data Corporation, found that financial service companies plan to spend $11 billion on artificial intelligence in 2020. And according to online news agency Consultancy.uk, payment technology companies were the most likely of all the banking sectors surveyed to use AI technologies in their operations. One of the biggest issues facing seamless payments, however, is fraud. Between 2017 and 2018 in the UK, £228 million was lost from personal bank accounts and £126 million from business accounts due to fraud.
My name is Frances Zelazny and I'm the Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer for BioCatch.
BioCatch is a behavioural biometric authentication and threat detection company that allows banks and other companies to stop fraud online.
Most of the applications for AI-driven behavioral biometrics today have to do with preventing new account fraud. And this means that people, criminals, can use all of this data in order to apply for credit cards, government benefits, insurance policies, open online bank accounts. And all of this puts pressure on determining that somebody is who they are when they make that application. So this use case has applicability across the board, whether you're talking about banking or commerce or government. Every aspect of our society is now under pressure to figure out whether somebody is using stolen or synthetic identity in the application process.
So if there are an increasing demand for instant payments, but the risk of this is as high as Frances suggests, won't more people find that their payments are being stopped? That might have been the case before AI was applied. Michael Reichblatt, co-founder and CEO of fraud prevention company Forta, explains more.
Let's assume that everyone is a good buyer. And unless we're sure, based on all the billions of examples, like very, very precisely, that they are trying to commit something that's wrong, then we'll stop them. Rather than generalizing and blocking substantially more good transactions and kind of preventing good people from buying. And just stat is on average, for every actual fraud that is being stopped, 20 non-fraudulent transactions are being declined. And either by the bank or by the retailer or by the payment company, someone along the line, someone will raise a red flag and says, this looks suspicious to me, without having the full context and maybe trying to maximize for a specific financial outcome rather than being very accurate and very precise on in kind of punishing people when they're actually doing something bad.
Here's Matt Mills again.
So rather than focus on that half a percent, we focus on 100%. We look at good transactions and bad transactions, but most of our USP is around really accurately profiling good behavior. Because if you can accurately profile good behavior, if you can accurately profile what's normal, what's expected for a consumer, and you can put intelligent anomaly detection on top, then all of a sudden, when something is different, when something changes, when fraud happens, you can detect it that way round, rather than having to necessarily conform it to a pattern that you've seen in the past.
In a way, artificial intelligence and machine learning actually supports financial inclusion. For instance, if someone makes a legitimate transaction in an unexpected place, or perhaps in a location where there has been a lot of fraud in the past, then AI should allow the transaction to go through. Most of us remember what it was like before, when you've been on holiday in the past and forgotten to tell your bank that you will be abroad. So your card is stopped and you're stranded without any money. This is despite the fact that you probably used the same payment method to buy your flights, your train ticket or hotel room in the first place. But have you noticed that incidents such as these have fallen over time? Well, that's because the tech is getting better and can accurately profile good behaviour, as Matt Mills says. But it's not being used everywhere as yet. Think about Rashid and Charlie from episode 5. They saw their legitimate transactions in sub-Saharan Africa stopped. the wider implementation of AI in payments could eventually stop that from happening too. But what then are the implications of this? Here's Stuart Riley from Citi again.
We all have access to the same models. They're becoming fairly commoditized. But what we don't all have is access to the same data. And I think, you know, there's, again, a couple of aspects to that. There's the appropriate use of data and the appropriate data that's collected. So the sort of data privacy and data protection. And then there's the concern that, you know, what if single companies amass substantially more data than everybody else and therefore can drive kind of monopolies, you know, over that sector or that service area that they're in. You know, that's something that does have to be carefully considered. I think the alternative side of that, though, is that if you don't end up with some companies that have enough data to provide these services, then there are certain business functions that's going to be incredibly hard to do. And so we talked about payments and the speed of payments and the scale of payments. You know, without using those technologies, the industries and the countries that want to move into micro instantaneous payments, that just wouldn't be possible. So there's a balance to be had, I think, between, you know, how much we want to control these things and how much we want to encourage them.
This all seems pretty convenient. Data collection allows legitimate transactions to go through seamlessly. Fraud is avoided, potentially saving banks, retailers, and consumers millions each year. But is it as simple as that? What happens, say, if all this valuable data gets into the wrong hands? In 2018, political consulting firm Cambridge Analytica was found to have harvested the personal data of millions of people's Facebook profiles without their consent, and may have used the data to influence the outcome of the US presidential election and the British referendum on Brexit in 2016. Could something like this happen again? Here's Matt from Featurespace.
Organisations which aren't obviously monetizing your data are doing it in a more subtle way. And unfortunately, that tends to mean that they're working with whoever is the highest bidder, which doesn't always mean that there is good intentions involved. And this is where we are going to see, in my opinion, the biggest negative impact on AI and machine learning, unless we can find a way to better manage how these algorithms are used to profile people and display advertising to them. I think if you look at the Cambridge Analytica side, the reality is some of the organizations involved are really bad at self-regulating. And so I think that whilst in our core market, the regulation, it doesn't necessarily help that much because the organizations are doing really well and they're doing great things to go out and self-regulate. In some of these other areas, then yes, I think regulation is going to have to become a requirement because, frankly, the organisations aren't doing enough without it.
Hopefully, companies have learned from the mistakes of the past and data will be safe. Regulation should help. The introduction of General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, means data protection and privacy for all members of the EU and the European Economic Area. It also limits the transfer of personal data outside of the EU and the EEA. Data should be safe and only used when companies are given explicit consent to do so. But what happens if there is a problem with the data in the first place? This is Lukas Spruck, Programme Director for Finance and Economics at the Alan Turing Institute.
Quite often we are getting excited about using those algorithms and provide data analytics. But in fact, there is a lot of data there that is not yet at the state that you can directly use it. There are risks, and there have been problems with that in the US, where those algorithms, sometimes they extract features in the data that we wouldn't like to see, such as, you know, they find biases in data that, you know, there was, I can't remember which state that was in the US, that one of the banks tried to play a little bit with those machine learning algorithms for credit scoring, and the algorithm figure out that certain people from certain race should not be given a loan. And the way this has been done is that even if you remove race from the data set, other words, you don't want an algorithm to use that particular information, you can find cross correlations in that data set because, let's say, people from certain ethnicity do certain tasks that, you know, and through that, you can find those dependencies in the data. So that's one of the things. And, you know, there are lots of questions whether this is an algorithm that is evil because we program this to maximize this credit worthiness, you know, that the algorithm is trying to figure out. Or is it that we feed those algorithms with data and the data itself has biases, and in the past, we just weren't very good in tracking that down. So, you know, those are kind of questions that we are
So the machine could be learning biases that from humans?
That's right. I mean, machine is, you know, all those algorithms, what they're doing, they take data and they spit out some information. So if you put a data that contains bias, then computers are able to find it and will find it typically. And you know, so that's actually one of applications of the machine learning algorithms. If you want to check whether a certain company is biased towards certain, I don't know, say sex and race, you can use algorithms to detect that.
Wow. So you could potentially find out if a company's racist by
that's
using
right. Or was at least in the past, yeah.
As we endow technology with traits relating to human behaviour, are we at risk of replicating our own flaws? The same flaws that we are trying to avoid by employing AI in the first place? It all comes down to the quality and the quantity of data you have. Without both, there can be serious issues. Here's Stuart.
Yeah, any system that we put in place, artificial intelligence or more traditional, we are responsible for. And one of the challenges with artificial intelligence, or many forms of it, is that you move from computer systems that are what's known as deterministic to ones that are probabilistic. And that's a challenge because the probabilistic ones, so the ones that are based on machine learning, they're not easy to articulate exactly what they would do in any given situation because the data that they're being fed will determine. So in a deterministic system, you've programmed it to do exactly a certain path and it will always follow that path. So you know exactly what it would do in any situation. A probabilistic system is one where the data being fed into it is going to determine the behavior. And so when you sit down and look at that, you have to be very careful about how you're going to test it, what bias that data might infer into the system. And so we spend a lot of time at the moment talking to our regulators about how are we all going to work together to be able to use that technology, but also prove and evidence the behavior of it so that we understand the conduct risk implications or the market risk implications of that.
So if we believe what the banks and fintechs say, perhaps data can be protected, biases will be avoided, and regulation will be upheld. But what about job losses? This is probably one of the biggest issues relating to the adoption of AI in society today. Some estimates put job losses at 40% within the next 15 to 20 years, as more and more tasks become automated. But what's the case with payments and fraud detection? Here's Stuart Riley again.
Yeah, we haven't seen significant job losses. And the reason I think that's true is that although we are automating work that humans did in the past, as we automate that work and scale those businesses, we redeploy those people into other areas where they're typically adding more direct client service. So in the example, and actually I can give you some real examples in numbers, in our operations area across markets and our payments business, we have eliminated just over 200 jobs through artificial intelligence and robotics in about the last year or so. But at the same time, just in our payments client servicing area alone, we added more than 200 roles. So you sort of see that the employment level is flat to growing, even though we're automating a huge amount of what we do. Because as we automate, it gives our businesses the capacity to grow and service more customers and service higher throughput. And so other areas grow with it. So to date, I think, you know, our current trajectory with artificial intelligence actually is aligned to history that shows that as we get more productive, we end up increasing jobs.
Matt Mills agrees.
There's something which helps to move an industry forward. The first fear is it's going to mean losing jobs. But what's great is we're not seeing that. Banks are investing really heavily in data scientists and machine learning experts, and they are themselves building teams in order to get more money and essentially more information out of the data that they're collecting. And so actually we're tending to see that change hasn't happened yet, although of course it's something that people need to be aware of.
For Francis, humans will never be redundant. They are the ones that teach and program artificial intelligence in the first instance.
I might be a little bit conservative, but I don't see how a computer can understand by itself without any human element what it is looking at. I mean, even in the world of automated car, you know, automated vehicles, the system is programmed and has to learn certain things. So it's based on, okay, this is a pedestrian. So then you change, like, you train the system to know that this is a pedestrian, but somebody is putting the pedestrian in front of a car, in front of the computer, in order to have it learn. So I personally don't see that happening where humans are completely out of the picture. But I do see that there will be more and more uses for AI that we haven't thought of. You know, clearly, once you have automated vehicles, then that may spur on other industries and other use cases and other capabilities for AI that we haven't thought of today. And so I think that it just opens up a whole new realm of possibilities, but does not necessarily take the human completely out of the equation.
This is Swapna Malika, a senior manager at the Royal Bank of Canada.
For example, our platform, we provide insights to our clients. But at the same time, when we interview our clients, they say that they want to have a human touch as well. So basically, they don't mind walking into a branch and talking to an advisor face to face. So there, that human connection is not going to go away. I think it's going to get enhanced. It's going to get supplemented by artificial intelligence in the future, or is getting supplemented by AI right now.
And Matt Mills, he's of the same opinion.
Historically, one of the other concerns has been around dehumanizing your relationship with the financial services organization as well. So people like to be able to call someone when it comes to banking products. They like to be able to speak to a human being. There is nothing more frustrating than a bad chatbot, you know, and you see a lot of these new banking products come out that have these AI chatbots. And, you know, one of the most common questions is, can you please put me through to a human being? You know, so it's not working quite as seamlessly as I think people hope.
So I'm back at the Barbican, and you can see that there is a human element to most of the exhibitions here. A lot of it is interactive, used to make things easier as opposed to make humans completely redundant. But of course, that might change over time. Something that Stuart Swapna and everyone else in the podcast are quite reluctant to focus on, and rightly so. Nobody can predict what will happen in the future and exactly how artificial intelligence will evolve. Nevertheless, it is plain to see that AI and machine learning are already changing our lives in ways we may not even realise. As computer processing speed increases, banks and payment platforms will continue to adapt to the new normal, and new questions around data collection, job losses, and the ethical use of AI will arise. For now, at least, humans still have a central part to play in this evolution. And now here's Charlie with the in-house view.
Today, we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and its impact on Treasury. I've got with me today Magdalena Milkartz, who is head of digital channels and data for Europe, the Middle East and Africa for Citi's Treasury and Trade Solutions Division. Welcome, Magda.
Thank you for having me.
It's never been more stressful to be a corporate treasurer. Regulatory changes, increasingly demanding customers, geopolitical uncertainty, and the strains of running ever longer global supply chains make the job harder than ever. So my question to you, Magda, is how is artificial intelligence helping to relieve the treasurer's burden?
So AI helps treasurers make sense of large amounts of data where the time-intensive human analysis would have previously been required. And I think that there are probably, in my mind, two areas where AI is making a difference. It is allowing treasurers to make better decisions, and it is allowing treasurers to make faster decisions. An example would be a liquidity optimization. The AI can help better predict the liquidity and, as such, consolidate that liquidity in a more intelligent, more efficient way.
I recently saw a survey of 700 treasurers, and it found that only 1% had implemented any kind of extensive artificial intelligence system, and only 20% said they had any plans to implement one in the next couple of years. So I would ask you, as the finance sector embraces cutting-edge tech and AI, is there a chance that treasurers are being left behind and not getting these advantages you've just mentioned?
First of all, we need to understand that AI is not really a new thing. The rise of AI dates back to 1950s, and machine learning started to flourish in the 80s. So the most important thing for any organization, not only treasurer, is to realize the potential of data, whether internal data or any external publicly available data and create a data strategy.
And if companies don't invest in this data infrastructure, what kind of damage could that do? What are the threats?
It's very simple. Inefficiency leading to being disrupted. And let's take an example of Netflix disrupting Blockbuster. On one hand, it was a digitization-based disruption. But actually, data and AI played a critical role in that process. So while me as a person can log into Netflix and search for one particular movie, in reality, we all browse through all of the suggestions that Netflix recommends to us. And that's really where AI is deployed. And that's what really has changed a customer experience on top of doing it digitally.
Thank you, Magda. I want to talk a little bit about fraud now. Does AI make fraud more likely or does it make it less likely?
So I'll have to bring out a survey that was done by PwC, which mentioned what they called a silver fraudster. It's a male, over 45 years old, employed by that company for over 8 years. And that type of fraud is still quite popular. So an internal fraudster who knows the company quite well, knows the processes, knows elements of what works how, is still happening. So automation could definitely deal with that aspect and could improve that aspect.
So that roots out the internal silver fraudster.
A little bit.
The old school.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you, Magda. And finally, in 10 years' time, given the advances in robotic automation and machine learning, will the traditional treasurer, as we know him or her today, will they be extinct?
Not at all. The function will evolve, and it will become the advisor of the business. So it will be definitely a world where treasurers are driven to work in autonomous cars, and where humans, AI and robots are working side by side.
Wonderful, Magda. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thank you.
This podcast was produced, presented and edited by me, Kanika Snigel, with support from Mango Productions, with help and leadership from our head of digital, Chris Hunt, and our project manager, Mia Bailey. The City In-House View was reported by Euromoney specialist content editor, Charlie Corbett. A special thanks goes to the staff at the Barbican, who were kind enough to let us record at the AI exhibition. And thanks to support from Citi. For all the latest coverage on transaction services, please visit euromoney.com/transaction services. You can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook. And if you want to get involved in any of our future podcasts, please email podcasts@euromoney.com. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the series, leave us a review, and recommend us to any friends and colleagues that have a passion for corporate treasury.